There have certainly been cases where entire families have disappeared under strange circumstances over the years. In many cases, it is believed that the families simply needed to, or wanted to, start a new life and went off the grid to do so. This week, though, we're going to look into a case that is certainly much more sinister than that, and even though the remains of a husband, wife, and young daughter were recovered, proving that they did not disappear purposely, there still are no concrete answers, no suspects, and there has been no resolution whatsoever to what happened to them. Over the years, many theories abound as to what may have happened in this case, and investigators themselves have even said that most people investigating murder would wish for the evidence that they have within this case. And yet, the evidence seems to point in many directions without any clear path to take to solve the crime. Hello, and welcome to episode 126 of Gone But Never Forgotten. An entire family murdered, but who is to blame? The murders of Bobby, Sherilyn, and Madison Jameson. Bobby Dale Jameson, who was 44, Sherilyn Leanne Jameson, who was 40, and their daughter, Madison Stormy Star Jameson, who was 6, all lived in their family home in Eufaula, Oklahoma. The family was known to those around them, and even family and friends that knew them, as a rather enigmatic family, because they seemed to dabble in a little bit of everything, and they also were known to generally keep to themselves for the most part, being hermits, so to speak. Neither Bobby nor Sherilyn worked for a living, as they both suffered from disabilities. Bobby from chronic back pain from an injury that he received in a car accident in 2003, and Sherilyn from bipolar disorder that many have said she didn't take care of properly, and as such she was known to suffer from frequent and severe at times bouts of depression. As such, the family managed their existence, it is believed, from disability payments from the government. The family had plans to purchase a 40-acre plot of land about an hour from Eufaula in the wilderness of Oklahoma. They planned to, at least initially, live on the property in a storage container that they already owned and that was already on their property in Eufaula. It was also believed that the family intended to make that move in the very near future, and as a part of that plan, Madison had already been pulled out of school. It was said also that Madison had developed an invisible friend, something that children are apt to do when secluded from other children. Her invisible friend's name was Emily. Bobby and Sherilyn, however, believed that Emily was actually an evil spirit or an evil entity that was living within their home, something that was not new to the family. It was said that Bobby and Sherilyn believed that their home was inhabited by more than one evil spirit, and Bobby had even told the local pastor, Gary Brandon, that there was 2 to 4 ghosts living on the roof of the family home, and Bobby had even asked Pastor Brandon in the past if he knew where he could purchase special bullets that could be used on spirits. So, as you can see already, there was either a lot of spiritual activity around the family home, or a lot of mental health issues that led to perceived spiritual activity around the home. Bobby and Sherilyn, though, didn't seem to shy away at all from spiritual things. Sherilyn was said to have done seances with one of her friends, and her friend has even said in interviews that Sherilyn seemed to take those seances far more seriously than she did. The family had even spray-painted various messages on the storage container that was on their property. One of those messages seemed to be a caution to the neighbors. The message said that witches did not take very kindly to people killing their black cats. This message was in response to the fact that three of the family's cats had allegedly been poisoned, and Sherilyn believed that one of their neighbors had done it purposefully. Now, Bobby and Sherilyn were not the only people that believed that there was something going on within and around their house. Many of their friends and family members have said over the years that they had seen and felt strange things occurring within the house that the Jameson family lived. It has also been widely reported that there was a copy of the Satanic Bible that was found within the Jameson home. People had been told that Sherilyn had purchased the book as a joke, so to speak, but Pastor Brandon would later say that Bobby had confessed to him the fact that he was reading through the book. For those that don't know, the Satanic Bible is a collection of essays, observations, and rituals that was actually published by Anton LaVey in 1969, and it is the central religious text of LaVeyan Satanism. It has been said that the Satanic Bible is the most important document that influenced and still influences modern-day Satanism. The book trumpets the fact that one should explore one's own nature and one's own instincts. For anyone that is a Christian or spiritual on any level, really, you can likely understand that the ideals in such a text could certainly attract ill spirits at worst, and certainly influence the mind at the very least. The family had been going through a lot of strain and stress within it, aside from the spiritual goings-on that they reported leading up to the disappearance that we're about to get to. A lot of the issues stemmed from what appears to be a massive falling out between Bobby and his father, Bob Jameson. Approximately 6 months before the disappearances, Bobby had actually filed a protective order against his father. Bobby alleged that Bob had threatened to kill Bobby, Sherilyn, and Madison on two separate occasions, one in November of 2008 and the second one in April of 2009. Bobby had also claimed that as a part of that, Bob had hit Bobby with his car on November 1st of 2008. Within the application for a protective order, Bobby would say that Bob was a very dangerous man and that Bob believed that he lived above and beyond the law. And he also said that Bob was known to associate with prostitutes, with gangs, and he would do and also be around people who were using meth. Bobby would also say that in that application, his entire family was afraid, and that he himself lived in fear of his father at all times, every day. That protective order would go before the courts on May 18th of 2009, and it was ultimately dismissed by a judge. Part of the reason that that protective order was being applied for was likely because Bobby had already started or was in the process of starting litigation against his father in another matter. Bobby was actually suing Bob because Bob had said on many occasions when Bobby worked for him that if he worked for free at the gas station and convenience store that Bob owned, One day, Bobby would own half of the store and thus half of the profits later in life in return for all of that free labor that he did provide. Bobby said in that litigation that his father had never followed through and that he had never received any of that money from his father. On top of all of that, between Bobby and his father, Cheryl Lynn was also going through things that were also taking an extreme emotional toll on her as well. In July of 2009, Cheryl Lynn's ex-husband had taken custody of their son, Colton, and largely because of that, in September of 2009, Cheryl Lynn was hospitalized after she attempted to take her own life. On October 9th of 2009, just about a month after Cheryl Lynn had been hospitalized, the family would pack up their truck for a trip. The intention of this trip was to look into a plot of 40 acres of land that was about an hour from the home, as mentioned, in the Oklahoma wilderness. There is a lot of chatter online about the video of the family as they loaded their truck for this trip. In the video, which you can easily find online, it has been said that the family appears to be rather trance-like as they move and make trips back and forth to the truck. There are also parts of the video, too, where you can see the family members staring blankly at one another, seemingly silent, and staring off into the distance. Now, obviously the video doesn't have sound, so there are a lot of guesses as to what is going on, but when I watched the video myself, I didn't necessarily see too much that made me believe that they were under some kind of spell or anything that really suggested that there was something spiritual or trance-like really going on. What I saw was a family that was hard at work at loading the vehicle, and frankly, we have personally had many a time where we've loaded the car and probably looked much the same way. Now, add to that the fact that clearly this family believed that their home was possessed or inhabited, and you could understand that maybe in those moments when they were staring off into space, they believed that they were looking at something. There is a lot of assumptions by people as to what the family was going through in those moments as they loaded the truck. Nonetheless, the family would get into the truck and they would allegedly meet with a man who was associated with the owner of the 40-acre plot of land that the Jamesons were interested in purchasing. It's believed that the man was the last person that saw them alive, but when interviewed, it was believed that he had nothing to do with the disappearance of the family. He simply told investigators that he had met with them at his secluded property in the mountains of eastern Oklahoma, and that he had not seen anyone else in the area at all during the time that the family had come to see him. When friends and family could not get a hold of Bobby nor Cheryl Lynn, at first there was not really much concern, as the family was known to go completely off-grid for periods of time, and many believed that this was simply one of those times. However, things became much more sinister and much more serious a week after the family had left and been last seen. On October 16th of 2009, hunters at a remote location in the woods would come across a truck that was seemingly abandoned on the side of the road. The truck was quickly discovered to be the truck that was owned by Bobby and Cheryl Lynn, and when investigators attended the scene, they would find that the truck was locked. Inside of the truck would be Bobby's wallet, Cheryl Lynn's purse, the family's jackets, a GPS, Bobby's cell phone, $32,000 in cash in a bank bag that was stashed underneath the driver's seat, and sadly the family dog, Maisie, who was by that time very malnourished but still alive. The truck itself was found on the side of a road, but it was not found in a way that would lead you to believe that the truck had been casually pulled over or parked with the intention of stopping and leaving the truck behind. That, of course, led investigators to wonder what had happened to cause the driver to pull over in such a haphazard way and then leave the vehicle, leaving everything seemingly of value behind as well. There was also no evidence of a struggle on the inside of the vehicle, nor the outside of the vehicle, and there wasn't even much disturbance in the soft dirt that was all around the vehicle itself. Former Latimer County Sheriff Israel Beauchamp would later say that the appearance of the scene led him to believe that they were either forced to stop at gunpoint, or they were stopped by someone that they recognized, because there was literally no evidence of any kind of struggle. He said that it appeared to him that they either left willingly, or they were forced to leave by some sort of force. This is where the case certainly starts to get strange. It is certainly odd that the entire family seemingly left the truck of their own volition, or were forced, but that they left seemingly everything of value behind and also left their dog. This is also not a family that was willing to go for a long hike in the woods, because Bobby was known to have a bad back and both he and Sherilyn, as previously noted, were disabled. When investigators checked out the GPS, they would find out that the truck had previously been higher up on the hill where the truck was found, and when they did investigate further up the hill, they did find footprints, but there was not any other further evidence to be found. The other puzzling thing was the $32,000 that was found in the truck, and as we will talk about later, that has led to much speculation within this case. Family would say that they were not aware of where that amount of money would have come from because the family was known to be struggling by with their disability payments. I did find some reports online that said Bobby had received $60,000 or $70,000 from his father as a settlement for their lawsuit, but I could not find any substantial proof of that. However, in an interview with the I Don't Drink Coffee podcast in 2022, Israel Beauchamp would actually say that $32,000 in the Jameson case was missing. So, that does lead some loose credence to the rumors that the settlement was made and then that Bobby had split that money between he and Sherilyn. The search for the family was said to have been very extensive. Over 300 people actually helped to search for them. There was an air search as well as a ground search with over 300 people, horses, mules, ATVs, a drone, and 16 cadaver dogs all used within that search. But there was no further evidence found at that time. At that point, seemingly, everything went cold. 4 years later, on November 16th of 2013, investigators would get their next and saddest break in the case when hunters were looking for deer hunting locations deep in the wilderness, and they came across the partial skeletal remains of two adults and one child. The bodies were found 2.7 miles, or just less than 4.5 kilometers, away from where the Jameson family truck was found. I found this to be strange. To me, that seems well within what you would suspect a general search radius would cover when looking for missing people. However, I do also realize that this was densely covered terrain and that oftentimes it is said that searchers can pass within mere feet of a body or bodies and not know it. It is strange to me, though, that if cadaver dogs passed nearby, they did not pick up a scent whatsoever. Suffice to say, though, 8 months later, on July 3rd of 2014, Joshua Lanter, who was the Oklahoma State Medical Examiner, would positively identify the remains as belonging to Bobby Jamison, Sherilyn Jamison, and Madison Jamison. Due to the state of decomposition and the fact that the remains were not complete, however, there was no cause of death determined. Lanter did say that there was not any verifiable evidence of trauma, but that was not clear at all because of the same reasons. There was also, as you can expect, evidence that animals had damaged and moved parts of the human remains from the scene. There are certainly some pieces of evidence and information in this case that remain questioned to this day. First of all, there was a specific briefcase that Sherilyn was seen on the video footage loading into the truck. That briefcase was never discovered. Also never found was a gun that was owned by Sherilyn. That gun was not found inside of the home after the disappearance of the family, nor has it been located ever since. And what we're really left with in this case are theories. And there are a lot in this one. Let's break each theory that is out there already down quickly, and then I will also share a couple of ideas that I have of my own that came to mind as I researched this case. First, there is the theory that I think pops into the mind of many. The Jamison family got lost in the woods and they died from hypothermia, or the elements themselves. There were heavy rains in the area when the family is believed to have gone missing, and the temperatures were around 40 degrees Fahrenheit, or 4 degrees Celsius, at their coldest at the time. This was, of course, 2009, so it would be much easier to get lost than it would be, say, now with the technology we have. However, as I said earlier, even though this was a family that seemed to be comfortable in the wilderness to some extent, seeing as they planned to buy land and move there, they were also a family who were severely disabled. The odds that they were going for a hike that would ultimately take them almost 3 miles from their truck seems unlikely at best, in my opinion. The second theory that seems to gain some ground here is murder-suicide. To lend credence to that, I should mention that inside of the truck was found an 11-page hate letter that was written by Sherilyn to Bobby that laid out the fact that she was severely unhappy. It would seem that on some level, Sherilyn blamed Bobby and the life that he had chosen as a hermit as at least part of the reason that she had lost custody of Colton. Sherilyn had also written that she didn't enjoy their life and that she wanted a divorce. Heartbreakingly, Sherilyn also said that she did not care at all about their daughter, Madison. Consequently, family did say that Bobby and Sherilyn, if nothing else, were good parents, and that they didn't believe that either of them would do any harm to Madison, because they believed that both loved her dearly. Sherilyn's mom had even lived with the family for a time, so one half would have to figure that she would have some grasp on the family dynamic. Mental health, though, as we do talk about a lot, is a very serious thing, and something that one cannot simply gloss over is an 11-page letter filled with hate and the fact that Sherilyn was known to go through deep spells of depression. Add to that she had already tried to take her own life very recently, and this theory certainly does appear to hold at least some water. The third theory that has taken off in the years since is the theory that Bobby's father, Bob, had killed the family. As mentioned, there was a lot of turmoil between Bob and Bobby, including death threats, but ultimately it seems that not a lot of that held up in court, so nobody truly knows if this is a possibility. For what it's worth, Jack Jameson, Bob's brother, has come out and said that Bob himself was dealing with a lot of mental problems at the time, including Alzheimer's, and that Bob was spending a lot of time in care homes and hospitals at this time. He has said that he doesn't believe that Bob had the capacity to carry out murders or have any part in the planning of murders at the time that they took place. Bob also died very soon after the disappearance of the Jameson family in December of 2009. The fourth theory that is out there circles around drugs. This one seems relatively loose for the most part, as people seem to base it on the fact that there was a lot of money in the truck, combined with the apparent trance-like way that the family was acting while they loaded the truck for their trip. Many people apparently believed that Bobby and Sherilyn did drugs, and many have hypothesized that this was all about a drug deal that went bad. There are different theories that spider off from this one, from the fact that Bobby and Sherilyn planned to purchase drugs to sell with the money that they had with them, or the fact that they had sold drugs and perhaps ran off with the money, and varying things in between those two theories. Finally, the fifth theory is that the family was killed by a cult in the area. It has been said that there were different cults operating within the area, and there was an apparent tie-in to a white supremacist group allegedly for the family. Because Bobby was disabled, the family had hired a man to do work in and around their home, and he had actually stayed with the family for a time as well. However, the man would find out that Sherilyn was of indigenous heritage, and then it was said that the fact came out that the man was part of a white supremacist group. People knew that the man had started to call Sherilyn by racist names and even used racist slurs when talking to her and of her, and that things had escalated from there. It was even said that one time the argument between Sherilyn and the man had gotten so bad that Sherilyn had grabbed her gun, chased the man, and even fired a shot into the ground beside him. Sherilyn had reportedly then chased the man from the property and told him that he was no longer welcome there. The man himself was cleared by police as a suspect, as they said that he had a solid alibi. However, that doesn't mean that someone else within the group or cult couldn't have committed the crimes for him. Strangely, a friend of the Jameson said later that an anonymous woman had called her and said that she had previously been a part of a cult in the area. The woman said that there was a list of names that the cult had listed of people that had been a problem for the cult in the past. The woman said that when she would see a name from time to time, she would go home and Google the name, and she said that two of the names that she had come across were Bobby Jameson and Sherilyn Jameson. I know that many of us hear about cults and groups like this and kind of roll our eyes at times, but it certainly is a possibility, as we have seen in many cases, and there does appear to be a tie-in here. And now, I'll share two of the off-the-cuff ideas that came to my mind as I researched for this episode. First, the idea of drugs. If we don't know where that money came from, I wonder if there was a chance that Bobby and Sherilyn had been selling drugs for someone in the area, and they had attempted to escape and purchase those 40 acres with the proceeds of those drug sales without giving back whatever money that they owed and were on the hook for. If that is a possibility, and I'm sure that's a bit outlandish, perhaps they were caught, found, and dealt with. However, that certainly leads to more questions, like why wasn't the vehicle searched and the money retrieved? Unless someone took the briefcase that perhaps had the other half of the money, and they believed that that was what they were owed. That briefcase really feels like a smoking gun in this case. As I said, Sherilyn was the person that was seen putting it into the truck, and her gun was never found. What I found myself wondering was if Sherilyn really did have a death wish for herself, but also for her entire family. Maybe she brought her half of whatever money the family had, and she had it in that briefcase because she had set something up in that wilderness. If Sherilyn had set up a hit on her family, she could have convinced Bobby to pull over, or she herself could have pulled over if she was the one driving, when she saw someone on the side of the road, and it would explain why there was no evidence or struggle left behind. Perhaps someone took the briefcase from Sherilyn, not knowing that there was more money within the truck, and they simply left after they had committed the murders. If the hate that Sherilyn had written about was so very real, maybe she would have found something poetic in paying to have her husband, who she loathed, and her daughter, who she said she didn't care about, murdered by using the money that they had gained in some way, shape, or form. Perhaps even in that lawsuit with Bobby's father. If all of that was true, whoever carried out those murders would not have returned to the truck because they had already received their payment, and they wouldn't want to risk leaving any evidence behind with the truck. All I can say is that the more that I think about that, it seems to make more and more sense within my mind. It also ties into the fact that the former sheriff says that there is $32,000 missing in this case. Needless to say, as there always is, there is a person or people out there that know what happened on that October day in 2009 when three people's lives were taken. If you are one of those people, please come forward. In cases like this, there are always tips that trickle in and theories that trickle out, but money, time, and efforts are spent by investigators trying to close cases like this one. Furthermore, there is a family that is left behind that does deserve to know what happened to their three loved ones, regardless of how grisly the explanation may be. This is an open case that can certainly be closed. I feel like there is not a chance that somebody doesn't know what happened to Bobby, Sherilyn, and Madison. If you know anything, please reach out to the proper authorities and help to let the family know what happened to their loved ones. I would be remiss if I didn't touch on the fact also in this case that there is a lot of spiritual things that seem to have been real or perceived going on around this family. There was a lot of talk of evil spirits, and there was a lot of talk about the Satanic Bible. Our minds are terribly hard to keep pure in the world that's around us, and as a Christian, but even more so as a person who has struggled mightily with filling my mind at times with various evils, and yes, you could perhaps even argue that true crime stories are one of those, I have learned that I need to protect my mind because of insecurity, doubt, and perhaps most severely, paranoia. All of those things can become things within our lives that can dictate our thoughts and our actions. Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9 says, "Keep your thoughts continually fixed on all that is authentic and real, honorable and admirable, beautiful and respectful, pure and holy, merciful and kind, and fasten your thoughts on every glorious work of God, praising Him always." I know that it's getting harder and harder, it seems, in the world around us because there are so many things in our lives that seem to run completely opposite of all of those positives. But remember that there are positives in the world around you, and specifically in your own life. Even when things are seemingly at their worst, there are positive things that you can focus on. Start with trying to be that positive in someone else's life today and tomorrow and for the next week. Thank you for listening to Gone But Never Forgotten. Be well, be better, and I will see you back here again next week.